The teraphim are intriguing because they're mathematical prodigies. I imagine a battery of seraphim would give any IBM or UNIVAC an inferiority complex, because I think they can handle numbers faster than those machines can handle tapes or punch cards. I imagine that many of the forecasts, call them prophecies if you want, that are worked out by planetary authorities are done by a battery of seraphic computers. The papers tell us here that they could number the hairs of our head if they wanted to. Now, there are a couple of us here that count wouldn't be too difficult to make, but you girls represent a more formidable problem. But even there, they say a seraphim wouldn't trouble herself to count them. She'd know. She would just know how many hairs you had in your head. Now, I don't even know that that's even been computed. I've got 186, but you girls may go up in the tens of thousands, you know. They tell us they're affectionate. They tell us they're sympathetic. They tell us, oh, in talking about the transition ministers over in the Marantia Light, which is really a part of this paper. See, this paper, 38, is really, 39 is a part of it, and then all the section on transition ministers and the Marantia Life is a part of it, and the section on seraphic guardians of destiny is a part of this paper. This paper is really kind of distributed in several places in the book. They tell us that when these seraphim, the transition ministers, which would be the fifth order of the ministering spirits of the local universe, when they aren't even assigned to serve with us, they're just standbys, they're reserved. They often just come over and invite us out for a cup of coffee or a short beer. And they sit and we talk and they say, the soul of many an ascending mortal has for the first time been kindled by the divine fire to service through just friendly association with seraphim that had no responsibilities to that human being. They were just being friendly. You're having a coffee break together. When we wake up on the mansion world, I think we're going to be very surprised, because I don't think we're going to know very much about what's over there. I don't think this book will prepare us for much more than 1% of what we're going to find. I don't think this book contains much more than 1% of the story, and maybe nowhere near 1%. Look over to section 3 in our paper tonight, the section entitled Unrevealed Angels. Suppose that section weren't here. You wouldn't miss it, would you? We'd be very happy with the story of seraphim. But stop and think. All that we know about the ministering spirits of the local universe is the discussion of just 1/7 of the angels in the local universe. 6/7 of all the angels, 6 angels out of 7, are not mentioned in the Arantia book anywhere except in this one short paragraph on unrevealed angels. I've done an awful lot of thinking about what are they doing, and I'd like to share my speculation with you. Take a look at page 181, section 14. Section 14, we're in paper 15. 15, the seven super universes, and this is the last section, entitled Purposes of the Seven Super Universes. Let's read what it says. There are seven major purposes which are being unfolded in the evolution of the seven super universes. Each major purpose in super universe evolution will find fullest expression in only one of the seven super universes, and therefore does each super universe have a special function and a unique nature. And then farther down, as our Vantan is unique in nature and individual in destiny, so also is each of its six associated super universes. A great deal that is going on in our Vantan is not, however, revealed to you. And of these unrevealed features of our Vantan life, many are to find most complete expression in some other super universe. The seven purposes of super universe evolution are operative throughout all seven super universes, but each super creation will give fullest expression to only one of these purposes. To understand more about these super universe purposes, much that you do not understand would have to be revealed, and even then you would comprehend but little. This entire narrative presents only a fleeting glimpse of the immense creation of which your world and local system are a part. I have the belief that all seven of these super universe purposes are going on, they are unfolding in the super universe of Arvanta. I believe that the local universe of Nebadon also contains all of these seven purposes. And I think that the seraphim that we know about are concerned with one of these major purposes. And the other six-sevenths of the seraphim are concerned with the other six major purposes that are unfolding in Nebadon as a part of Arvanta. Somewhere, if I can find it, this is referred to again. I never know where to find some of these things. One of two places to look, and it's always the second place. On page 1163, one, two, three, four, paragraph four, starts the discussion where they say that they can't tell us too much. First, because our language is inadequate. Second, because we don't have enough brain power. Third, because the super universes haven't been finished yet. And fourth, because we are ignorant of the six prime purposes of super universe development, which do not pertain to the mortal ascent to paradise. The whole story of man's ascent to paradise is the story of one of the major purposes which are being expressed in the evolution of the seven super universes. And there are six other projects just as important that are going on that we know nothing about.
What do you think they have? The six other one. Six others and the seventh in each super universe?
And in each local universe, yes. And each one of these projects is going to find its acme or zenith of expression in one of the seven superuniverses. But they're all seven are going on in every superuniverse. And I believe in every local universe, because what is a superuniverse except its component local universe? And all of this I associate with the fact that we only know about the functions of one-seventh of the ministering spirits, the angels, the seraphim, of the local universe of Nebada. Six out of seven angels are unrevealed to us. And I think these other six angels represent those angels which are concerned with these other six projects. I think that's reasonable. You see, this, the Urantia book then is a story, the Urantia book is the epitome of the extract of a synopsis of an abridgment of one-seventh of the whole story.
Well, Bill,
I'm gonna break it down.
Isn't there a lot of different types of evolving worlds?
I don't know. I don't know. Apparently we know about most of the worlds, but again, let me remind you of something. In each local system, there's the world of the Univitatia. And if they never mentioned that world, you'd never miss it, would you? And yet in every super universe, there are 1 billion, or will be 1 billion Univitatia worlds. That's as many worlds as there are in Havona. There are 7 times as many Midsonite worlds. Pardon me, Midsonite worlds. There's 7 times as many Midsonite worlds as there are Havona worlds. And how many other things might we not know? You'd never miss the story of the Midsoniters. You would never miss 6/7 of the seraphim, would you? Except, I think, just because they're interested in encouraging us to think, they just casually tell us this story is the story of only 1/7 of the angels. They just drop that in.
Now, as you speculate, what might the other faces be?
I have no basis for speculation.
Uh-huh.
I know when I'm late. And you folks know that I'm real bold. You give me a thread, and I'll try and deduce the whole garment out of the thread, but I haven't even got a thread here. But I can merely say this. I think that the principle is disclosed in the diverse natures of the seven master spirits. But since we have only 1 bit of information, we cannot interpolate or extrapolate. You've got to have at least 2 points, and better still, 3. Then you can do some speculating, but from a single point, you can't speculate. All we know is that probably the mortal ascent will achieve its acme of expression in Orvandan. And this is the three-way blend of the Father, Son, and Spirit. And we know that the other master spirits are different, but we have no basis to even guess what they are expressing.
But they will have a mortal ascent also.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But they've got 6 other things going on. And each super universe, you see what we've got is 7 steeplechases. And 7 entries in each steeplechase, and there's going to be a different winner in each race. And I'll bet on Orvandan, but only in the 7th race. I don't think Orvandan's going to win the other 6 races. She's going to win one. Isn't that an interesting speculation, though?
But I've never thought of it before.
I can make the association, but I can't go beyond that. I hit a stone wall. I have no basis for speculation. I mean, and I'm not interested in fantasy. The seraphic worlds are the ninth group of the Salvington sphere. You'll recall there are 10 groups of spheres around Salvington. Each one, as I recall, is a cluster of 49 worlds. And we're told about the Melchizedek world, the Verondadek world, I'm probably going to miss at least one, the Lanonandek world, the life carrier world, on one of which is the central emplacement of the seven adjective mind spirits. We know about the worlds of the Finaliters, that's the fifth group, because the Midsoniters go there. We know that there are worlds of the spirit-fused mortals. There are a couple that I'm going to miss. The ninth group are the worlds of the seraphim. This sounds real grand, but you can search the Urantia book from cover to cover and you will find no mention of who is on the tenth group of Salvington worlds. That's just flat unrevealed. They don't even tell us it's unrevealed. They just don't reveal it. This is the last discussion of the Salvington world. And we should be told one more piece of information. What's on the 10th group? I imagine that these seraphic estates are really lovely. I imagine that these different angels have different aptitudes because they're all personalities. And I imagine that they have achieved a real maximum of beauty. And this is not just spiritual beauty, because these angels, as you'll recall, in their discussion of seraphic nature, they are so created as to function on both spiritual and literal levels. These angels, while they are spirit personalities, they are endowed with the capacity to see man as he is. They have a sensorium which will pick up the registry of physical reality. I imagine, therefore, that the seraphic estates are physically beautiful, as well as morontially exquisite and spiritually gorgeous. I'd like to go there, wouldn't you? Don't you think it would be quite something when you're up on Salvington and you're standing by? As a matter of fact, you're doing business with a universe orientator. They're the last seraphim to serve us. Just before we leave the local universe of our nativity. And it's their job to get us used to the fact that a senior is merely a prelude to being a new kind of a freshman. The top of the Morantia scale is just before the bottom of the spiritual ladder. When we graduate from Nevadon, we graduate into the freshman level of spirit existence. We are then first stage spirits. And we're shooting for the sixth stage in the core of the finality. Don't you imagine it would be fun if this universe orientator would invite us for a long weekend out on some seraphic estate, or you quit work for a while and just sit around and enjoy yourself and talk and speculate and compare notes? Because while you wouldn't be as old as some seraphim, you might be older than some others. Because I think it takes a while to get to Salvington. Have you any idea how old seraphim might be?
Well, they could be any age. I mean, they're still being created, aren't they? But we wouldn't be encountering them up there. The young ones.
I think that's where we might encounter some of the very youngest ones. When did Mike Hill come out here? your members. It's about 400 billion years ago. Do you remember how old the oldest inhabited worlds in Mebadon are? About 200 billion years ago. Now, we don't just exactly know when Michael and the creative spirit created Gabriel, but it's got to be in between those two dates. So let's split the difference and say 300 billion years ago might be a reasonable date to assign to the beginning of life creation in the local universe of Mebadon. And the oldest seraphim could be that old, or somewhere near there. So there might be seraphim on duty here whose age is reckoned in billions of years. Billions. I imagine that a seraphim who's only a few hundred million years old, well, they'll probably talk to her about the old core of seraphim before they got so many youngsters in it who are lacking in experience. What do you suppose it would be to talk, like to talk to a seraphim whose personal memory would go back 100 billion years, and to have her say that, well, they, you don't see them around here so much anymore, but there are seraphim around here that are 2 and 3 times as old as I am. What do you suppose it would be like? These seraphim get a real course of sprouts and education. They have to learn languages, and I rather imagine that they become the multilingual of the local universe. Because they're assigned to one planet or another planet, and they're pretty bright, and I rather imagine they pick up languages. I imagine that some seraphim may be able to speak several million different languages besides the standard languages. Well, suppose a seraphim were assigned to your ranchship for a tour of duty. What would a reasonable tour of duty be? 10,000 years? 5,000 years? Pick a number. 1,000 years? How long are they assigned down here? Let's say 5,000 years. Well, how long does it take for a human being to become expert in a language? By our normal educational method, where you're studying other things. In about, let's say, 4 years of high school and 4 years of college, that's 8 years of training in the same language. And then maybe, say, let's say you could visit that country for two or three summers and talk the language. In an 8 to 10 year period, you'd learn language, wouldn't you? You'd learn it real good. Well, in 5,000 years, how many languages could a seraphim learn? If we could learn a language in, let's say, 10 years on a part-time basis, she can learn 100 languages every century, 10 languages a century, 100 languages in 1,000 years, or 500 languages in the tour of duty of 5,000 years. And if you could speak 500 Urantia languages, you would have covered all of the languages of any importance, and you'd be down into some pretty insignificant dialects, wouldn't you? Into what they talked in this particular valley in New Guinea. How many languages does a seraphim know who is 1 billion years old, 10 billion years old, 100 billion years old? Or let's say some of the oldest seraphim, who might be as much as 300 billion years of age. Our years, 365 and a quarter days for each. Do you begin to see how experience gets piled deep in these older beings? regardless of their creative status. Just think what you learn. You girls aren't old enough to appreciate these statements, but JB and I have been around for a while. I mean, and when you're past 30, you'll begin to realize this too. But think of how much you've learned in the last 10 years. Yet 10 years ago, you were a mature man, and so was I. What have we learned in the last 20 years? What will we learn in 200 years on the mansion world? 2,000, 2 million. And we'll be that old someday. What does the seraphim know? When she's been in active duty for a billion years. This assignment, that assignment. She's been an office manager. She's been a bestowal attendant. She's been a group guardian. She's worked as a private secretary to a Melchizedek. She's been a bureau chief in a constellation government. She's been in Gabriel's intelligence corps. She's worked as a broadcaster, as a technician, as a transporter. She's whispered words like the 23rd Psalm into the ears of the shepherd boy. She stood up against rebellion like Menosha, who's the number two seraphic commander here on this world. She's watched all the damn foolishness of human beings and all the tremendous divinity of the Paradise Sons on their bestowal mission. Think of the range of experience of a seraphim who's got, say, 3 strings of campaign ribbons on her tomb. You know? Some of them with battle stars on them, maybe. Is it any wonder that these folks are interesting? And just think, as our experience deepens and lengthens, we begin to get the capacity to appreciate this kind of experience that an old seraphim had. You see lots of kids laugh at their elders, but you don't often see a fellow, let's say 35, laughing at a guy 50. The fellow 35 has been around long enough to appreciate that additional 15 years. And the longer I live, the more respect I develop for experience of any line. Because I know what I've learned in my line, and I know this other fellow must have learned something in his line. They start out and they give these seraphim a real course of training. They give them 2,000 years of basic training, observation, and then after they've been around 2,000 years, then they commission them in service. And I suspect in someone of the 7 levels of seraphic service, from supreme seraphim down to seraphim of the future. Let's stay with seraphim just a little bit, can we? The paper goes on to talk about their associates. I deem it a very interesting thing that the guardians of destiny are not listed in the 7 levels of seraphic organization. Because I think these 7 levels are organized by their groups, their companies, their battalions, their hosts, their armies. I think these guardians of destiny are unattached seraphim. They are detached from the seraphic organization. They are unattached. They are attached to an ascending human being. And they accompany that ascender all through the paradise ascension, including the ones who are attached on the mansion world. It tells us when we leave Avantan. This is page 290, paragraph 2. The pilgrims of time are transported past the dark gravity bodies of Havona to the outer planetary circuit for the transport personalities. A majority, but not all, of the seraphim of planetary and local universe service who have been accredited for the Paradise Ascent will part with their mortal associates before the long flight to Havona, and will at once begin a long and intense training for supernal assignment, expecting to achieve as seraphim perfection of existence and supremacy of service. And this they do, hoping to rejoin the pilgrims of time, to be reckoned among those who forever follow the course of such mortals as have attained the Universal Father and have received assignment to the undisclosed service of the core of the finality. And over on page 348, section 4, adopted seraphim, it says many of the faithful seraphic guardians of mortals are permitted to go through the ascendant career with their human wards. And many of these guardian angels, after becoming father-fused, join their subjects in taking the finaliter oath of eternity and forever accept the destiny of their mortal associates. Angels who pass through the ascending experience of mortal beings may share the destiny of human nature. They may equally and eternally be mustered into this core of the finality. Large numbers of the adopted and glorified seraphim are attached to the various non-mortal finality cores. You'll remember there are six other cores of the finality. Now, if I'm lucky, I'll find what I'm looking for. I'll probably have to look twice. What determines where a seraphim goes? Well, on page 1248, paragraph 5, it says, before leaving the mansion world, all mortals will have permanent seraphic associates or guardians. And as you ascend the Maranshah spheres, eventually it is the seraphic guardians who witness and certify the decrees of your eternal union with the Thought Adjuster. Together they have established your personality identities as children of the flesh from the worlds of time. Then with your attainment of the mature Maranshah estate, they accompany you through Jerusalem and the associated worlds of system progress and culture. After that, they go with you to Edentia at 70 spheres of advanced socialization, and subsequently will they pilot you to the Melchizedek and follow you through the superb career of the universe headquarters world. And when you have learned the wisdom and culture of the Melchizedek, they will take you on to Salvington, where you will stand face to face with the sovereign of all Nevada, and still with these seraphic guides follow you through the minor and the major sectors of the super universe and on to the receiving worlds of Yversa, remaining with you until you finally end Sakanafan for the long Havona flight. Some of the destiny guardians of attachment during the mortal career follow the course of the ascending pilgrims through Havona. The others bid their longtime mortal associates a temporary farewell. And then, while these mortals traverse the circles of the central universe, These guardians of destiny achieve the circles of Seraphington. That would be world number 6 in the Father's circuit in the near regions of paradise. And they will be in waiting on the shores of paradise when their mortal associates awaken from the last transit sleep of time into the new experiences of eternity. Such ascending seraphim subsequently enter upon divergent services in the finaliter corps and in the seraphic corps of completion. Man and angel may or may not be reunited in eternal service, but wherever seraphic assignments may take them, the seraphim are always in communication with their former wards of the evolutionary world, the ascended mortals of time. The intimate associations and the affectionate attachments of the realm of human origin are never forgotten, nor ever completely severed. In the eternal ages, men and angels will cooperate in the divine service as they did in the career of time. As far as I know, in terms of numbers, just massive numbers, mortals and seraphim probably constitute the bulk of the population of the seven superuniverses. There's an awful lot of us, and there's an awful lot of them. I think we outnumber them. But I think they are the second most numerous group of personalities in time and space.
Do you think survivors outnumber them?
I don't know.
Have you thought of that?
Yes, and the big question is, are we propagating surviving mortals faster than the local universe Mother Spirit is creating seraphim? And I don't know the volume of output in either direction. I said surviving mortals. For seraphim, the surest way of achieving the paradise deities is by successfully guiding a soul of evolutionary origin to the portals of paradise. Therefore is the assignment of guardian of destiny the most highly prized seraphic duty. Only destiny guardians are mustered into the primary or mortal core of the finality. And such pairs have engaged in the supreme adventure of identity at oneness. Now, what does that mean? You know, they're always working as a pair. This means this: the two beings, the two seraphim, have achieved spiritual biunification on Seraphington prior to their reception into the finality core. That expression is used in just one other connection in these papers. When two creatures trinitize, they unite, and that union is spoken of as spiritual biunification.
You don't make this thing.
I don't think there's a being. I don't think this is trinitization.
This would be one.
Well, let's see what it says. In this experience, the two angelic natures, so complemental in all universe functions, achieve ultimate spirit, two in oneness, repercussing in a new capacity for reception of and fusion with a non-adjuster fragment of the Paradise Father. That's intriguing. This is the Father fragment, but not a thought adjuster. The non-adjuster fragment of the Paradise Father. And so do some of your loving seraphic associates in time also become your finaliter associates in eternity, children of the Supreme and perfected sons of the Paradise Father. These are father-fused seraphim who enter the mortal core of the finality. that's one destiny. Let's consider the other destiny as Seraphim.
But that too is one fused with...
Yes, Berkeley. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means when it says that happens to two creatures when they trinitize, except there they qualify it. They say that the spiritual biunification of the trinitizing parents of a creature trinitized son, this unification is only for the present universe age, pending the emergence of the Supreme Being.
I don't think that's going to work better.
But they don't make that qualification when they speak of the spiritual biunification of two complemental seraphim resulting in the fusion of the united pair with a non-adjuster fragment of the universal body. Let's face it, we're contemplating things that are so remote from human ken that this language is probably pretty gross in trying to even crudely suggest what happens up there. I'm convinced of this, that the two seraphim do not subtract from themselves by such unification. I think they add to themselves. Well, the alternate, a seraphim then, may achieve this spiritual biunification, father fused, enter the mortal core of the finality, or such a seraphim may enter any of the other, well, at least some of the other six finality cores. We don't know what those qualifications are. Or such a paradise attainment seraphim may enter the core of seraphic completion. Let's look at page 441, which is the last section in the next paper, which is really the twin of the paper we're in. It says just before section 9, Seraphington is the destiny sphere for angels, and their attainment of this world is quite different from the experiences of the mortal pilgrims on Ascendington. Angels are not absolutely sure of their eternal future until they have attained Seraphington. No angel attaining Seraphington has ever been known to go astray. Sin will never find repose in the heart of a seraphim of completion. Well, then I would realize by reason, by analogy, that these earlier seraphim are incomplete seraphim. If the Seraphington attainment angels are completion seraphim, they are created in incompletion. By evolutionary ascent, they achieve their completion. They are created in incompletion. By evolutionary ascent, they achieve their completion. They're kind of like us, aren't they? With a touch of difference. Oh yeah, in the Lucifer Rebellion, many were led astray.
But they're way up the ladder, too.
The graduates of Seraphington are variously assigned. Destiny guardians of Havona Circle experience usually enter the mortal finality core. Other guardians, having passed their Havona separation test, frequently rejoin their mortal associates on paradise, and some become the everlasting associates of the mortal finaliters, while others enter the various non-mortal finality cores, and many are mustered into the core of seraphic completion. And then it goes on to discuss here all of the functions of completion seraphim.
must be a little bit like Jesus Christ coming down and attending all of his.
Well, they're analogous, but not the same. In other words, they have now realized the full potential of the seraphim. They've done all the growing a seraphim can do in the present universe age. They have filled out their britches, which would be a simple way of putting it. They go on. Yes, it says in here, these seraphim of the local universes have experientially compensated for the differential of divinity potential formerly setting them apart from the ministering spirits of the central and the super universes. They've moved up on our ruler. They have now closed ranks with the supernathim and the seconathim. They serve as associates of the super universe seconathim and assistants to the high orders of supernathim. For such angels, the career of time is finished. Henceforth and forever, they are the servants of God, the consorts of divine personalities, and the peers of the paradise finality. Then it tells how they come down in large numbers, right back to the universe of their origin, there to complement the ministry of divine endowment by the ministry of experiential perfection. Don't you know that when you run into one of these seraphim, they're going to have hash marks all the way up to their elbow? You're going to look at them. You're going to see them wearing the experiential campaign ribbons from here to paradise. That's a seraphim that really carries authority. And I imagine that's a very soft-spoken seraphim. We never had troubles with colonels. Our troubles were all with second lieutenants. Nebadon is, comparatively speaking, one of the younger universes. Does not have so many of these returned Seraphington graduates as would be found in an older realm. Nonetheless, we have an adequate supply, for it is significant that the evolutionary realms disclose increasing need for their services as they near the status of light and life. Completion seraphim now serve more extensively with the supreme orders of seraphim, but some serve with each of the other angelic orders. Even your world enjoys the extensive ministry of 12 specialized groups of the seraphic corps of completion. These master seraphim of planetary supervision accompany each newly commissioned planetary prince to the inhabited world. And these are the seraphim who are the departmental chiefs of the 12 departments of planetary government. The angels of progress, the religious guardians, the angels of nation life, and so on. They're all paradise attainment seraphim. Then they wind up by saying, all of them are always and forever our true friends and unfailing helpers. I find it exciting to contemplate the knowing of seraphim, beings who are going to have so much in common with us. We're going to go through so much together. However different is our origin, we're going to grow very close by commonness of experience. each one of us is going to have two comrades on the way to Havona. They're going to go all the way through the local and the super universe careers league, and possibly through Havona as well. And even if they don't go through Havona with us, we'll see them when we wake up on Paradise.
There's one.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure, Burke, when that happens. Maybe or maybe not. I don't know. It's not important. We'll know them anyway. I don't know how long it takes to get to Paradise, but I know if you're with someone for a long time, and if the two personalities are growing in maturity and understanding, just the sharing of all those experiences is bound to develop tremendous bonds of friendship and affection. It's so handy to lean back and say, Joe, do you remember? And you don't have to explain all of what you're talking about. You know? Joe remembers, and you just start talking to each other. That's being friends. And if you've been on a journey for 10 million years, or 100 million years, or a billion years, or several billion years, how close would grow the ties between folks who have been together through such a long journey? I don't think you get bored with each other because I don't think you're together all the time. I think you make many excursions. I think many times the seraphim, our seraphim associates, will go through something for seraphim that mortals don't go through. And we'll have excursions that they won't go through, but the long trip will be together.
We'll be compatible, won't we?
We sure will be compatible. We'll learn from them and they'll learn from us. Do you have any questions about seraphim? I'm not going into the seven orders. We'll just skip those. That's the next paper. You'll remember, too, the seraphim, we may have as an associate a seraphim that's already been to Paradise in temporary service. Any seraphim may be summoned to Paradise to serve as a Paradise companion. That's a long tour of duty. And when they use the word long, I don't quite know how many years to assign to it, but it comes to an end. She may go back down to the local universes, or I imagine it would be a pair of them that would go up there together. We may have, as a destiny guardian, or destiny guardians, we may have seraphim that have been on Paradise already. Because they can go right to Paradise when they're summoned. Except that they'll have to have help getting there. Because the seraphim don't have gas tanks big enough to take them from Eversa to Havona. I imagine they have to be transported by the constant.
Why don't you tell us about how they're, and it tells in here, it mentions briefly about their spiritual charge, how they're charged.
In polarity? You read it first. I think it's in part one.
Well, and there's something not in the paper tonight, so maybe it didn't.
It's in part one. And that has to do with their having to work in pairs always. Supernafem are limited in spirit polarity regarding only one phase of action, that with the Universal Father. They can work singly except when directly employed in employing the exclusive circuits of the Father. When they are in power reception on the Father's direct ministry, Supernafem must voluntarily associate in pairs to be able to function. Sakanafem are likewise limited and in addition must work in pairs in order to synchronize with the circuits of the eternal sun. Seraphim can work singly as discrete and localized personalities, but they are able to encircuit only when polarized as liaison pairs. When such spirit beings are associated as pairs, the one is spoken of as complemental to the other. Complemental relationships may be transient. They are not necessarily of a permanent nature. That's page 286, paragraph 5. You want to talk about cherubim and seraphim? I think they're very interesting. There isn't too much in the papers about them. There's only about 2 pages, almost exactly. They're created by the local universe Mother Spirit, and they're not merely kind of aggressive and kind of retiring. They're actually positive and negative. How do they word it here in the papers?
Energy positive.
Yes. One is an energy positive personality, the other energy negative. The right hand deflector, whatever that means, or positively charged angel is the cherubim, the senior or controlling personality. The left-hand deflector or negatively charged angel is the seraphim, the complement of being. Each angel, each type of angel, is very limited in solitary function. Hence, they usually serve in pairs. When serving independently of their seraphic directors, they are more than ever dependent on mutual contact and always function together. You see, as you go down from supernaphim through seraphim to cherubim and seraphim, you have appear to have an increasing duality of expression and an increasing need to function pairwise, which becomes maximum in the case of cherubim and seraphim. Unless they're working with a seraphim, they always work in pairs, the two together. Then again, cherubim and seraphim are fascinating because they are one of the 3 orders of beings that we know about that are characterized by 4 creatures. Avona Servital, Universal Conciliators, and the Cherubim and Seraphim. Every 4th Cherubim and Seraphim is less spiritual, more Maranche, in fact definitely Maranche. They are not spiritual beings. They are Marantia ministers. Every 4th Avona Servital is of the material order. Not material as we understand that word, but material in the Avona sense of that word. Material in the Triata sense. Every 4th Conciliator is a quasi-material being, and this is material as we understand it. The divine executioner of a conciliating commission can operate with material reality. He's the physical arm of the conciliating commission. This is Mendel's law all over again, I think. I think I got a section, you know. The last section in one of the appendices on creative technique deals with horse creatures. No, we just talked about it. Do you folks understand the operation of Mendel's law? It's a law of chance. Sure and simple. It has to do with how genes combine in producing heredity. And you can satisfy yourself on Mendel's law by getting a hat, any hat, a man's hat, better than a woman's generally, unless it's a female felt hat, and get yourself some checkers. Get four of one color and four of another. And then shake them up in the hat, and without looking, pull them out by pairs. And you'll get four pairs. And here's what you'll get. Let's say you've got black and white. You get a pair of blacks, a pair of whites, and two mixed pairs. Now, occasionally you will get four mixed pairs, but just as often you will get four unmixed pairs. And if you'll keep count, I did this all one afternoon just to satisfy myself. If you keep count and take your tally at the end of the day, you will hardly vary from one pair of blacks, one pair of whites, one mixed pair, and another mixed pair. Do you remember in algebra? Remember a real simple algebraic function? What is the sum of A plus B multiplied by A plus C? Well, it's A squared plus 2AB plus C squared. Remember that? That's what we've been talking about. A squared is two whites. 2AB merely means two mixed pairs. An AB pair and another AB pair. Whenever you get four creatures, I think you've got a Mendelian ratio working. And they tell us that one fourth of the cherubim and an ocean. And that's the way they are, and that's the way they stay. And let's see what happens to the other three fourths. I'm very intrigued when I look over at the next page to see that these classify in three groups. We have our Merantia cherubim. They're the ones that are created Merantia and stay that way. Then we have what they call mid-phase cherubim. They generally speaking stay cherubim. But then we have what they call ascension cherubim. Let's go back to our checkers. And let's let the red checker symbolize the Merantia quality and the white checker the spiritual quality. I think the Merantia cherubim is the pair of red checkers. And all the others are the other three pairs. Two mixed pairs and then a double white. I think the two mixed pairs work out as mid-phase cherubim. They're pretty generally stay cherubim. But I think this simple white is the ascension candidate. There's a real spiritual potential there, which is expressed. These cherubim become mansion-level creatures, and then after being embraced by the local universe mother spirit, and then when that supply is over the children, they're embraced a second time for the local universe mother spirit. And from that second embrace, they emerge as full-fledged characters with a whole future of the
rapid service to the sanctum open to them. So you might be talking to a seraphim who's only been commissioned for 1,000 years, but this seraphim maybe was a cherubim for 5,000 years before that. So you can't always tell by how shiny the seraphim's uniform is how long that first county's been around in service. I think this Mendelian ratio is very interesting, because I think it explains for all four species of Onocervital, Conciliator, Morocco cherubim, and I think it explains also the immediate parents of the secondary midwifery, the children of Adamson and Rex. But that's another story. That was a 1 in 4 gene. Only there, the physical was the dominant, the spiritual was the receptacle. Because 1 in 4 was sometimes invisible, and those were the parents of the secondary midwifery. The midwifers are all over this book.
Before we get to the midwifers,
yeah.
Do you want to... the second embrace.
Yes.
Do you think that is a comparable thing to the Trinity embrace?
I do, yes. Because the Trinity embrace changes status, and the embrace of the Trinity Spirit changes status. Yes, I do. The deity embrace may change the status of the embrace being. Finaliters become mighty messengers. Those high in authority, those without woman number, through the Trinity embrace. Avonocervital become graduate guides through the Trinity embrace. Cherubim become mansion world teachers, and mansion world teachers become cherubim through the embrace of the divine minister below the universe. I think there's an analogy there. How comfortable they are, I don't know, but they're at least that comfortable.
Then it seems odd that the divine minister
can be this. I don't know. He just does. That's all. For all I know, the master spirits may embrace beings and change them. I don't know how many other orders may have the prerogative.
Well, he was trained when the seventh master spirit
embraced her. Yeah. Her embrace by a master spirit was a part of her developmental growth.
Well, he was embraced in two things.
Yeah, but she entered his presence too. He was in transmuting liaison with the infinite spirit when in the deity embrace. And later on,
the bright and shining or something.
Yeah, but that's afterwards. Early in the stage of a creative spirit.
Oh, yes.
She emerges from the infinite spirit just not too long before she leaves Stardust, and she then enters the embrace of the master spirit, which is the universe jurisdiction. And from that embrace, she emerges to accompany the creator sons of the local universe site.
But this later embrace, when the seventh master spirit, this one was embracing and she changes.
Yeah, but...
Well, what is that?
Well, I don't know.
She isn't even there. She's right here.
Yeah.
But an immediate, change takes place.
I don't know.
Isn't that wording in there?
Yes, it is. It is
on
the soul kill. It's not too specific. And whenever these papers are not too specific, I suspect it's because there's some things that we don't know. And they're not going to deliberately mislead us, but they'll let us mislead ourselves. For example, let's say that you have the job of dictating a revelation. And this is going to be an abridgment of the Urantia book. And for some reason, you're going to omit the super universe. You're not going to disclose how big the universes are. You're going to disclose that there is a local universe and there are other local universes. You see? And let's say you've got the problem of dealing with the Lucifer Rebellion. And you have got to explain why no judicial action has been taken about Lucifer. But the ancients of days do not appear in your revelation. And I can imagine you as a revelator using such an expression as this. We do not know why the arch-rebels are permitted to continue their existence in the system of Satan. Long since an appeal was taken to the great white throne, but no answer has been handed down to the governments of time and space. Now, you didn't say that appeal went to the Universal Father. But that would be the infant. And later on, if this revelation were to be expanded and the concept of the ancients of days were to be introduced, that statement could stand. And now it would be interpreted as the ancients of days of Eurasia. You see the value of symbolic language? Now there is some symbolic language in the Urantia papers, and it intrigues me very much because I think it is used deliberately. I've written up these speculations in creative techniques. For example, when a servable comes over from Super Universe service, he enters the divine embrace. No, he enters the central shine and knows the luminous person on God. That to me is symbolic language, indicating the function of something that we don't know about, but we should probably think of it as the deity presence on earth, the Father, Son, and Spirit. This would be a truthful interpretation for us to make at our stage of enlightenment. But again, let's go back to the great white throne as an analogy. I've done a lot of thinking about this, about certain symbolic languages.
Does that answer your question, first? When do we finish at 9?
When you want to.
Very frankly, I don't want to get into midwords because that's too long a subject.
No, we won't get into it.
But I'd just like to, since we're on the paper, I'd like to point out that the midwares have three classifications in the paper. They're classified as ministering spirits, which is why they constitute the last section in this paper. In other words, you'll find them discussed as ministering spirits on page 424, section 9. They are also classified as stationary personalities, permanent citizens. And that's why you'll find them discussed again on page 414, section 9, permanent citizens of the local universe. They are also classified
as ascending from the sky. And that's why you'll find them discussed on page 444, section 3, translated midwife. Page 444. They become members of the core of the finality. And this is why they are discussed again. I'll find it in a minute. On page 349, section 6, glorified midway creatures. They are a part of the history of Urantia, and that's why they are discussed on page 855, paper 77, the midway creatures. The story of the midwayers is all over the Urantia book. They are permanent citizens, ministering spirits, ascending sons, members of the core of the finality, and a part of the planetary history of Urantia.
I would like to ask you some questions, Tom.
All right.
A question, if
go
you
ahead.
Don't mind. It says that they are endowed with Urantia transition type of mind.
The primaries are. I think.
Secondary midwayers are physically energized by the Adamic technique. Does that mean the Tree of Life?
I don't know.
Spiritually encircuited by the Seraphic, comma, and intellectually endowed with Urantia transition type of mind. They are divided into four physical types, seven orders spiritually, and 12 levels of intellectual response to the joint ministry of the last two adjutants, spirit and the Urantia mind. These diversities determine their differential of activity in a planetary assignment. Now there is a pretty good paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's secondary memory.
They exercise or they use the last two adjutants and the Urantia mind.
There's an overlap there.
But when we get Urantia mind, we don't use adjutants.
No.
But they use them both, don't they?
Okay.
I guess they would have this station here to understand us and communicate with us. They would have to maintain those last two.
There's one more reference to Midway. I have nothing to add to that. Light and life, the final planetary destiny of midwares is discussed on page 626, paragraph 6. It discusses the function of materialized and humanized midway creatures functioning in the visible planetary government. On page 627,
paragraphs 6, 7, and 8, it discusses the possible liberation of the midway creatures for the paradise ascent in the first stage of light and life. But not all of them, perhaps. Because in the third stage of light and life, some will still be functioning, few remain beyond the fourth stage. In each case, it speaks of their achieving status as ascending sons by humanizing and by receiving adjusters. Now, what happens when a midwayer humanizes? That is not explained in these papers. But I associate it with some form of corporealization or physicalization. If a midwayer is to function in the visible planetary government as a communicating associate of human beings, then he has got to be communicable with. And we don't communicate with living electrical patterns. And I see this midwayer as taking on some tangible form with which he can make corporeal, physical, quasi-corporeal, quasi-physical contact with other people. And then he receives a thought adjuster. And if I can't figure out any other way he could get such a form, I can fall back on how did Mechavenda Melchizedek get a physical form, or how did the corporeal staff of the planetary prince get physical form. They can be constructed. Whether that covers this case or not, I don't know. But it's a helpful way of looking at it. What does it mean when you humanize? And evidently, you must humanize to receive a thought adjuster.
Would you say the 100 that came down here?
The Caligasti 100?
Yes, sir. Would you say that they were in the early stages of Marantia life, else they would have fused?
Well, their fusion was delayed because a typical place for fusion, I believe, is the fifth mansion world. But it can occur at any place throughout the whole Marantia life.
But normally you would think of their being selected from one of the mansion worlds before that.
Well, they had to be unfused or they couldn't have volunteered because you can't detach a fused adjustment. Mm-hmm. I don't think that everyone fuses on the fifth mansion world. I think some may fuse earlier, but evidently that's, as you look at a normal distribution curve, that's where most of them fuse.
That's average.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But the proof that they don't until later is the sun-fused mortal. He goes all the way through to Salvington without fusion and never does fuse. His adjuster is released and he becomes a sun-fused mortal. Have we covered that thesis?
Would you forgive me for asking?
No, go ahead.
One more thing. Here it says, the 12 levels of intellectual response to the joint ministry. Would you say that would be 12 levels, perhaps, of consciousness? Would that be a parallel?
I don't know.
What was that question?
What are the 12 levels of intellectual response which a secondary midwayer makes to the joint ministry of the last two adjutant spirits and the Marantia mind? I don't know. I think what they're trying to do is to give us some words here which will keep us from thinking that all midwares are standard design. They're quite different beings. They're all of a type in the sense that we're all human. But I think they're just as unique and different and have different aptitudes like we do. I think some midwares are great poets, and other midwares couldn't write poetry if their survival depended on it, but they may be wonderful physicists. I think midware aptitudes are just as diverse as human aptitudes.
Oh, we know that they have, but... physicists?
Sure.
In the different departments and...
medical.
That's what I think. I can't explain it. I can only guess at what that means.
Well, that's good.
I don't know what their four physical types are.
I'm sure there's lots. They say lots right there. And
yes, but they don't explain it.
No, they sure don't.
And I think we're supposed to get out of that is an overall impression that they're quite different within their order. That I think would be a valid deduction. And I just despair of trying to figure out what 11 levels of response are to the joint ministry of Marantia Mind, the adjutant of worship, and the adjutant of wisdom. But evidently there are at least 12 angles, 12 levels, or 12 something which are different.
Now, one other thing was interesting to me, that they're not on all the inhabited worlds, but they're always on a decimal planet.
Is that true? Where do you find that, Bert?
Second paragraph under section 9.
On the majority of the inhabited worlds. That's interesting.
I thought there was on every world.
These unique creatures appear on the majority of the inhabited worlds.
Well, of course. They are not on the
Vincentized
world. They're
not
bad.
No, I think when they talk about inhabited worlds, they're talking about us.
Oh.
And are always found on the decimal or life experiment planets such as your ranch.
Well,